This season at the First Time Podcast, we are returning to our first time roots. We hear all the time from listeners who've gone from thinking about writing a book to starting to write a book to having their very own debut author experience.
One of the things that these new authors say is that they've gone back and listened to all the episodes that cover off the various milestones. So this year we're going back too. We want to capture that first time again ourselves. We're going to follow a first-time author across the year, catching up multiple times along the way.
Our very first follower first-timer is Megan Rogers, author of The Heart is a Star. This segment of Follower First-Timer is brought to you by HarperCollins.
Megan Rogers, we are here with you on our seventh catch-up in this crazy huge year of your debut novel, The Heart is a Star, going out in the world. This week, we want to talk about festivals, about marketing, about publicity. This is all still going on for you, even though your book has been out for a few months now. Before we get into what's happened for this campaign for your book, you actually have a background in marketing. In fact, you were in marketing at State Library Victoria when you first came into my orbit. How did that affect how you thought about what different publishers were offering with regards to their marketing when you went about selecting the publisher that you decided to go with?
Oh, good question. Completely put marketing aside when I was choosing people, just because I feel as though that type of judgment or choice in the past in my life hadn't worked for me very well. I had two really clear boxes that I was looking to be ticked if possible. I mean, that sounds so, but if possible, right? So I wanted to be with people who I could be myself with, mm-hmm. who I really felt like I could just be me, the anxiety-ridden, creative person who sometimes needs a bit of reassurance and who is quite particular with each word and all of those things. And I really wanted someone to understand me. And then the other thing was I just really wanted someone to understand and champion the book. And I felt like if I could get those two things, then the rest would take care of itself. Because I think the thing with marketing is that when you choose a publishing house, you really have no idea what the marketing for your book is going to look like. And certainly, you know, when I was talking to different publishers, marketing was never mentioned.
Interesting.
Because
did you get a marketing plan as part of a bid?
No. We were still meeting by Zoom at that stage. And so I wasn't getting technically any paperwork per se at that stage. I was having conversations by Zoom. So I was really lucky that I had five different conversations, and each of those five publishers spoke all about the book and all about but I guess what I was wanting to do with my writing and my career. And they were all super generous and really insightful, but felt, you know, different ways about where they wanted to go. And as soon as I met Catherine Milne, it was kind of like falling in love.
Well, you had her on your vision board too, right, for listeners that haven't caught up on her
very much. How embarrassing is that? I'm so
no,
weird.
No, it's amazing.
That's cool. That's like really manifesting, isn't it?
How embarrassing, but I did. No. I sent her an image of it afterwards, kind of tongue in cheek. But she is hands down one of the most incredible women I've ever met in my life across any industry in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, for me, having someone see me, I mean, I was in tears in that meeting. Just, I'd never felt so seen ever. I've never felt so seen than in that moment. I have kind of since during this journey and with a lot of people at Harper's, but she really got it. And she would say things as kind of like seeing a really good psychologist. And I haven't had that experience personally, but I know people have. And they just say things, they'll say one sentence and you're like, oh, it almost has like take a minute, just go, so what? You know, just so insightful, both about me and the book. And as soon as she started talking about the book, I went, oh my God, you get it. You really get it. And so as soon as those two things, and it was the same choosing an agent, as soon as those two things happened, they were really, you know, my focus, because I just had figured that I had, you know, not one shot at this per se. I don't think it's as simple as that or anything like that, but I felt like this was my chance, you know, to feel seen both as a writer and as a person. So I grabbed onto it with both hands, and her, probably embarrassingly. So
Megan, am I right in thinking that your agent Zeitgeist, they offer marketing and publicity as well as representation? Is that true?
No. So, okay. And I know if he was here, he would say this much more articulately than me. So I'll explain it as clearly as I can. So for anyone out there who doesn't know, so Zeitgeist, so Benaithan, who works there, he is the head of publicity for Sydney Writers Festival and has been for 10 years. It has a long career in publicity and is really good in those ways. So just to kind of backtrack a bit, when I was looking for an agent, wouldn't have known that from a, I can't express how naive I was going into this. I want to stress this, because I had a couple of people come up to me in an event the other day, and, you know, they were writers and they were mums, and, you know, I think they had assumed that I was really connected and that I kind of knew these people already. And it's really important for my heart to express how much that's not true. I just had I wasn't networking. I wasn't going anywhere. I was at home, you know, in quite remote with my two girls for 10 years. I just hadn't been doing any of it. And I had looked around at agents, and I saw that Zeitgeist had, you know, Yumi Steins and Brooke Davis and Benjamin Law and Holly Ringland and all these people who I really admired, but also two people who were writing narratives that, you know, weren't scared to go into some dark topics. And so I thought, hey, you know, I literally sent three chapters off to, I saw it was open for submissions. I sent it to queries@zeitgeistsydney.com.au or whatever it was. I didn't even know how to pronounce Benaithan's name. I just to admit that. Didn't have a clue. I honestly had nothing at all.
I think that's a really nice point to make, because it's very easy from the outside to assume that people have really networked and know a lot of people, but what a long way you've come in a pretty short space of time.
Just I didn't, and I really want to say that, because I do believe in my bones that absolutely anyone can do this. I don't want it to seem inaccessible or like it's for the, you know, for the few or for the, you know, I literally was a mum working from home, sending my manuscript, you know, writing on my kitchen table, there's no more magic to it than that. There really isn't.
Was that the first place that you'd submitted?
So I submitted to them and another large agency, and ended up choosing, so two, and then so three chapters, or the first, I think it was the first maybe 10,000 words, to sound about right. After I met with Zeitgeist, again, it was similar to meeting with Catherine, that I really felt as though I could be myself and not feel silly for being a bit having self-doubts or needing a little bit of reassurance or guidance. And so for me, what Zeitgeist and Benaithan offered wasn't, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, you know, there was a radio interview that I was going to do that didn't work out, and so he knew them, and so he just emailed them because he knew her, just to say, look, could you reschedule because it didn't work out. Because this person, had a lot on, and they, time's going, anyway, but, you know, now and then an email will be sent out, like, just like, I guess, any agent would do. But the two separate roles, and if anything, it's the divide is probably even more separate because he has those two roles, maybe. you know, so the programming for the Writers Festival and so forth, like, you know, that's really separate from what he does. And it is really that kind of standard agent stuff, and it's really, you know, all the stuff that are, you know, the negotiations and all of those things that I find really uncomfortable. He's very good at them.
Let's go to the development of the marketing and publicity plan. So book's been signed, you're with HarperCollins and Catherine Milne. What did you bring? And because marketing and publicity, as we know from that chat with Amy Kaufman, is changing so quickly at the moment. It's a rapidly moving space, and there is diminishing space to get into. And I know this because I'm deep in my marketing and publicity plan right now. And I think the other thing that's really important that we're always trying to be transparent about is that there are the things that our publishers can do, and there's things that we can do ourselves as well. So how did you become involved, or how were you involved in the marketing and publicity plan that HarperCollins put together for you and the Heart as a Star?
That's a great question. And so the first meeting that I had was on their Writers' Day. Harper's have a Writers' Day where you go up there and they present, and it was really, really good. And I was totally out of my depth because, you know, nobody knew me from a bar of soap. So I sat down with Catherine and Benias.
So is that a bunch of their authors? Is that how that works, or it's you get a day to yourself?
So it's all the authors. They have an Authors Day later in the year, and they open up the office in Sydney.
So and, good.
I had some, because I had like flight credits from being, you know, not being able to use them. So I used that to go up because I wasn't technically published then as well. So I just wanted to kind of be a part of it because I was feeling a bit like,
amazing.
To be honest. So I went up and I used it as an opportunity to kind of meet with people. And interestingly, I was really, really aware of my background in marketing and how little it meant I knew about book publishing and how I needed to be really careful with that because, you know, I had, you know, when we were doing the children's book illustrator exhibition at the State Library, and I still remember you know, people coming in kind of trying how to do comment on how to do exhibition marketing, things like that. And I just remember walking into this meeting and the first thing I said was, look, I know I've got a marketing background, I'm not going to be involved in this at all unless you want me to. My role here is to support all your efforts, and I'm here to listen and I'm here to learn, because and I still have a lot to learn and to listen to. And I went into that meeting saying that up front and just saying, look, I, on all levels, am here to support the book and to support you. If you need me, great. If you want me to shut up, tell me to shut up. And so with the 4 weeks, you know, that they put together, I was absolutely uninvolved with all of it. And I mean that in a good way, because they know what they're doing, and I honestly had nothing that I could have contributed at all. I think that, you know, the only thing they said was, look, just keep doing what you're doing on social media. And, you know, there were a few times when I said, you know, do you want me to post this event now or a bit later, or what do you find the timing works with those types of things? And they gave me really good advice about, you know, when to do certain things, when to talk about, you know, the journey to publication, when to talk about this, when to talk about that. Because in marketing, often we get into our own lanes, you know, and for me it was arts and education marketing. And it's a particular thing. And I'd been in library world for a long time. I believe in it in my bones. And it's a different type of thing. And I wanted to honour their experience.
Megan, you mentioned 4 weeks. Was that how long the plan was for?
Oh, that's a good question.
You just mentioned that in passing.
No, I should be clear about that, because my belief is that usually, like, that's kind of how long a book, like, so when a book comes out, you usually kind of get roughly, you know, that month, that not just with your publisher, right, but just in general, like, that's, you know, that's what happens. No, I would say the plan specifically, like, there wasn't like a Gantt chart with like you know, Excel spreadsheet, and there wasn't anything like that. Okay. It was just more that that's kind of how, you know, the life cycle of a book, you know, a bit.
So there's obviously a plethora of different ways that you can market a book, publicize a book. There's events, podcasts, book clubs, all the things. What did you like doing the most?
Oh, that's good. So I think that what I loved the most was any opportunity that I got to talk to people one-on-one. So like book signing tables, that was really, really special, you know, because you're not in a big social setting. It's more intimate and, you know, sometimes people have read the book and they come up and they talk to you, and those personal interactions, I really like those. You know, they're the dream, I think, as a writer, you know, having, you know, being able to talk to a reader. And yeah, so I really enjoyed that. And again, you know, I know I bang on a lot about this, but just the booksellers, you know, going into bookshops was really great. Not just because you see your book, you know, there, and suddenly you're a 5-year-old girl again, doing your happy dance across the bookstore, but because the booksellers reaffirmed my faith in humanity. They really did. And I think I needed a bit of that. And I think it was perfect.
The bookshop visits is a really big thing. I mean, you see them all over social media. Have you set up any of those yourself?
Oh, that's a good question too. So no, there were a couple. So once, because I think what happens with, and I'm just talking about my own experience here, you know, the book comes out and you do all this stuff and then there's kind of a drop off. And I think, so I didn't do like, you know, the publisher does all the stuff during that time and the bookstores, and because they know which bookstores are, because they have ARCs, so they've read an early advanced copy. And some people respond to those copies. Mm. And so they're the ones, you know, that are really keen to have you in, and so they get listed. So I think it's not just about what the publisher's doing, but the feedback they're getting from the world around them as well. Mm. And so once you kind of get that drop off, then you waity, see how it's going to go. Because the thing is that all the marketing in the world, you know, at the end of the day, it's a book. And the book has to live by itself in the world, in people's hands. And you can market the bejeebers out of something. But, you know, Karen down the road who buys it from the bookshop, she's either going to like it or, you know, she isn't going to recommend it. That's just the fact. That's just the truth of life. And so I think I was fortunate in that it started to have a little bit more of a life of its own, and it started to, you know, sell, you know, relatively, and people were kind of talking about. So that's when some bookshops reached out to me and said, can you come in and do another signing? Nice. Or do you want to come in? Like a light. So same with libraries. So they're tracking borrowing things, and they have this fast back or flashback things where books have to be returned quickly. I don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've
heard of that.
Libraries. I don't know this. So anyway, so, you know, if a lot of people are putting it on hold, so yeah. Then they have this they tag it and you have to get it back quickly. And so a few libraries reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to come in and do a talk? Because we think that people would like to listen to you. So they were kind of organized through me. You know, then I just kind of said, yeah, sure. You know, such and such time is okay. And the same thing with, you know, interviews and things like that. I guess people read it and then they would reach out to me directly then, often, you know, and sometimes still my publisher and my publicist, if they had those details, but sometimes people don't have those details, you know. Yeah. They just have your Instagram handle and they might reach out. So that for me was the kind of trajectory was, you know, my publisher did, you know, they're beautiful what they do, both on all fronts. You know, I should say that, you know, we're talking about marketing, but the design and the, you know, all the elements, all these amazing people, right, working behind the scenes in that time. And then there was a bit of a kind of, you just kind of wait a little quiet period, and then it you know, fortunately, people started responding to it, and that's when I became a bit more involved, if that makes sense.
Mm.
I want to jump in there to say, because I'm organising parts of my tour at the moment too, that it is also perfectly okay. And there's actually an online seminar coming up, but we'll miss it with the publication of this episode, for people to reach out to booksellers too. And that absolutely, for some of my, you know, for some of the tour, they are bookshops I'm either driving past because I'm going to a festival, or that I've had a connection with on Instagram. So for other writers out there too, you know, you don't have to wait to be asked. No. You certainly need to. And which, Catherine, I think we talked about it, the Secrets of the Green Room episode with booksellers is also a really good one, because they give the kind of timelines of when you need to get in touch so that they can make sure they've got stock, et cetera, et cetera. And that's something that your publisher can do with their rep to check that there's stock in, or that you can also, if you give them enough notice, do yourself as well.
Which is also a fun activity with a friend. It's a lot easier with a partner in crime.
Yes, I think. And this is a good time for me to mention the Debut Crew 2023 and give a little shout out. So if you look on Instagram, if you follow the hashtag Debut Crew 2023, you will see a plethora of the most incredible writers and talent. And so some of the group do buddy bookshop visits, and it's beautiful and lovely. And we were actually just talking online the other day, because we have a WhatsApp group, about the camaraderie that we have begun to feel going into shops and seeing all our mates' books there. Mm-hmm. And we always take photos and we'll go, look, and we'll, you know.
That's awesome.
I guess cheer each other on like that. Chris Cheers is part of our group, so I like saying that. So, you know, that too. And I think too that, you know, I was quite shy during this process, even though I don't necessarily come across it. I was really shy. And so maybe for, you know, God willing, knock on wood, the next book, you know, it might be different, because I do have a little bit more confidence.
Absolutely. Mm. One of the things that's really distinct about the debut experience, and Jane Watkins, publicist, has talked about this in previous episode, is that publicity for a debut book for the first time is as much about the author as it is about the book, because you're really telling the story of the author. So what were the elements of your personal story that seemed to really resonate, or that marketing kind of picked up on and that have followed through for you?
That's a good question. I think, interestingly, it wasn't something that, you know, Harpers were necessarily putting out there specifically. Like, there wasn't kind of, I guess, any or recommendations that they were giving externally or to me. I found really that it was driven by interviewers asking really great, I mean, that's been one of the joys, is just great questions, like really great interviews, and they themselves having a good idea of their audience and what might resonate with their listeners. And that has been, you know, I don't mind calling it like midlife, because I figure that's scientifically probably where I am. Average lifespan, you know, that the midlife. I mean, probably that was something that.
It's that Catherine's trigger words, so you can't say it.
Oh my God, I think you're living to like 120, so I'm far off.
God, I'm so sorry. I didn't. Sorry. My midlife. No. If I live to be 88, God willing, great. I figure if this is me smack bang midlife, I'll be pretty happy with that. So, you know, I think that was, because it's a theme in the book, you know, I guess, at the middle of life. And so, you know, that along with the fact that, you know, I'm a mum, and even though Layla's story is really far from my own story, you know, kind of the idea of identity and trying to come to a place that is more authentic, a more authentic space for you to be and live in community with, you know, that was something that both, you know, myself and people around me are experiencing. So talking about that seemed to resonate.
We've talked marketing and publicity. We're going to touch a little on festivals. I know that you've been to a couple now, A, because I've seen you at least at one. Have you refined an approach to festivals? Are there things that you do before, during, after? Tell us about festivals.
Oh, and when you say approach, do you mean approaching them to be there or approaching them like as in what I do when I go there? And be me.
Kate and I were just talking off air, and one of the things that I hope she doesn't mind me revealing was that she was just doing a layout of all outfits and putting outfits in Ziploc bags.
Yes.
Shay has taught me well.
Shay has taught me very well. I know a lot of people do, for example, the post-festival emails to whomever. I wondered if you had any tips and tricks.
That's my advice about always on the Monday, putting aside some time to send all your emails or your, you know, DMs to say thank you to the people you've met and, you know, look your next things up.
You're making notes.
Good one, though. I'd also like to say festivals, you know, they're hard to get. So if you're a writer out listening to this right now, don't, you know, because it is really hard also seeing, you know, okay, so talking about, you know, in a previous episode we spoke about, you know, kind of watching other people and feeling. I think festivals
is the worst.
It's the biggest one. Yeah.
Yeah, I just have to mute them if I'm not invited. Yeah, I don't want to see other people having festival fun.
I feel like it would be easier to start a festival than to get invited to one.
There you go. And so I'm always really, when I'm talking about it, I just really want to acknowledge the fact that, you know, there are limited places. A lot of festivals are doing things based on topics and, you know, there's all these things that go into it. And so my invites to festivals actually happened through a bookseller. So, you know, we talk about marketing, publicity and all these things. So for me personally, the most beautiful, you know, opportunities have often come through relationship. Mm. And so, you know, there was a beautiful bookseller who really dug the book, sort of technical, literally, you know, they dug the book my team had approached Sorrento Writers Festival and things like that. And they, you know, it was such a great festival and they were, you know, booked out. And, you know, Emily Westmoreland from The Avenue, you know, said, hey, you know, Megan's a local, you know, and she was the one, you know, as a bookseller. So it wasn't, you know, any flashy marketing, you know, it was her. And then she was, you know, the youngest person to run a festival in Australia doing Williamstown. Mm. And programmed me there out of, you know, the big-heartedness that she is. And so, you know, they don't always happen in the ways that you think either. So just wanted to kind of put that shout out to the intricate web that is books and the book community and ecosystem. The amazing people there too. Because, you know, it is word of mouth and relation. I do believe it's such a cliche, but you know that word of mouth is the best form of marketing. But for me, it's about relationships are the best form of marketing. Mm. And so I did both of those. And answering the question about my approach, I have no approach, obviously, because I'm taking notes from Kate's advice. That's a great one. So one of the things, though, that I realised is that it's good to have copies of my book. I only had two copies of my book in my handbag, just to give to not necessarily anyone influential per se, but, just to, if I was in a conversation and I thought, hey, this person might like to read my book, then I handed it over, in that moment, if it happened organically, do you know what I mean? Mm. I wasn't chasing down.
Yes.
People like a crazy woman. I promise I wasn't doing that. So that's one thing. And outfits, I have a personal thing that I try not to buy anything new these days, partly because of budget. And, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing there. And so I think the dress that I wore for Sorrento was the same dress that I wore for my bookseller dinners and things like that. So I definitely wear them more than once. But, yeah, and I just... I look out for things that are secondhand, and I have a few really great shops locally that, you know, sell brands that I really like that are sourced kind of used, basically. And so I got them secondhand and wore them then. But I feel very lucky to have done some because it's not often the common experience. And, you know, if I get invited to more, then I'll feel, you know, just as honoured, I think.
Before Catherine finishes up, I want to give some feedback and advice on what you do very well that is both publicity and festival-wise, and I talk about this a lot, is the sharing of socials that festivals or other people put out when they tag you. And I was just talking about this with my hairdresser this morning about that idea that it's such an easy value add that you can do. When you're at a festival, if you are taking pictures, that you can share them and tag people and tag the festival, or if the festival tags you, that you can share that on. And it's just such a simple way to amplify the work of the social media person at a festival who's working their bum off, and to get that out as well. And so you do a great job of that.
Oh, thank you.
An easy thing.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful thing, and it probably goes for then all of the touch points, like. You know, if you're on a podcast or you're on, if somebody's give, I just believe like if somebody's given you their time, then you know, the very least. I mean, the beauty at writers' festivals is that you're also promoting other writers, and other ideas, and you know, the organisers, because I just have so much respect for people who organise an event like that, because it must be mental.
It's huge.
So, yeah, I think any love that we can share is really important. It's a really good point.
Megan, final question. You have experienced a lot of different things in terms of marketing and publicity and festivals. If you were with a smaller publisher that had less effort or energy to put into those things for their authors, or if it was all on you, where would you focus your efforts?
Okay, so I think that in, you know, we use the term marketing, but I think because I come from like a not-for-profit arts marketing background, I always believe that the best marketing is the one that's most aligned with you. Mm-hmm. So if it comes across as really, really authentic, then it works. And you don't need a budget for that. And a lot of it is about relationships. So I would say find, you know, when we're writing, you know, a lot of people say follow the heat, follow the warmth. Follow what kind of rings true. And I think that will probably be the same for marketing. So if something feels kind of good for you, no matter, like it, I think there's no shame in anything. If you love TikTok, go hell for leather and TikTok. And don't worry, you know, if that rings really true for you, then do it without shame. Same with Instagram, same with, you know, any channel that you could use. You know, there's a lot of mediums out there that don't cost any money, and they're just about, again, amplifying your message. So I would say find something that feels really good to you, because I think that if you do that thing and if it is true to you, then that's what'll work.
People are so clever with that sort of stuff too. I always think of, is it Jet Mama who does biscuits that are iced to look like people's book characters or covers. You're just like, oh my God.
It's cupcakes too, isn't there?
Yeah, incredible.
That's so good. I mean, again, it's following something that brings you a lot of joy. Because I think marketing a lot of the time is seen as a dirty word, and I don't think it needs to be. It's really just about communicating. It's about relationships, and it's about talking, you know, to other like-minded people about something you're passionate about. And, you know, the world has enough negativity and enough sadness. And so anything marketing or communications that highlights books and reading, then I think we are better for it.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You You've been listening to the First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.